Streaming live around the world, this is Paper Cuts with Brad and Jay.
I'm the one you love. I'm Jay. Thanks so much for stopping by. Over there's Brad. It's his show.
It's his show. That's why I'm the host, and we just love Jay.
Now you know it's all natural. I mean, you know, nothing's rehearsed, right?
No, absolutely nothing is rehearsed on this show.
God, you just suck the life out of me. This feels like
you've got a lot grayer since we started this.
I have.
This evening, welcome to the show, Catherine Silva. We are live.
Whoa, on a Saturday evening, we are live. Good evening, everyone. Thanks for joining us. Yes, it's a Saturday. Confusing more people because it's not a Friday.
It's my fault right. This time.
It's cool. I mean, summer's getting away from us. Like the kids go back to school like in a month, but they're already busy. So we'll probably be doing more of these Saturday shows in the upcoming fall season and winter season. But what's up? Happy Saturday, everyone. Thanks for joining us. Speaking of which, thanks a lot to our special guest for being flexible, because Brad was like, hey, I have more important things to do Friday.
No, so, that's not what I said.
So we can't, you know, asking, you know, Catherine Silva, our guest this evening, if she could rearrange her whole schedule.
Yeah.
She
messed everything up.
She broke two other interviews for this evening to do our show. And so here we are tonight. Now the pressure's on us to perform because, you know, we've, you know, got our whole Saturday evening planned out. So, Catherine, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate, you know, rearranging your whole schedule. It probably hurt your whole month.
It's just crazy.
Yeah, but here we are. Before we get too far, Brian Bowyer says Catherine Silva rocks. We've been talking about music all day. We've been going back and forth talking about music and everything. And I told him I gotta get ready for the show. He was like, hey, she rocks. And then he gave me the devil horn.
He also rocks. Yeah. And I did a really fun podcast with him. What was it, in March?
Right.
That was all about rock and roll in horror. And it's just a hoot. It's a lot to listen to.
We chat music constantly every day, like almost every day. We find something to talk about, but yeah, just pass it along before we get too far. You have the approval of Brian Bowyer, and that's pretty cool because the guy is a little scary sometimes. So I'd rather have his approval.
Man, I don't know if I could ever be that cool. He's so cool.
Every story he tells, like, wow, you've done so much more with your life than I ever will.
Just a side note, his episode with us, it was one that Brad didn't join us. It was just me and Brian. There's a weather issue, a power issue, and it's one of our highest viewed shows in history. Just me and Brian. We did music and Brad's going over. Just all right. Sorry, Brad.
Jay likes to rub that in. I know.
Hey, Chad is here, so we can start. He's actually here almost on time.
He's pretty early today.
So we can get started. I'm going to go ahead and pour myself a drink. And Brad is on a new microphone. He's excited to use it. So take it away.
It probably sounds horrible, but we'll see. But Catherine, you've been doing all right today?
Yeah. Yep. Good day. Yep. Last work day of the week. So I am all happy from here on out.
You've been doing the podcast rounds lately. You were on, Slay House and William Sterling's podcast. Getting into release mode now.
Yeah, I did Killer Mediums. I did the podcast through Raven White has one that's called Nights with Emin Pinion. So I did that recently. I did Bloody Good Reads back in April. And I have, I think, another 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 scheduled over the next month. So
you should have sent us all the questions they asked you, so we wouldn't ask you the same ones. But
I don't mind. I like questions. I know the answers to them.
Yeah, we're not rehearsing at all. No, go ahead.
Yeah. Erica and William are both in the chat. So I was with you doing so many podcasts like this. You all sort of clumped together. Do you get burnt out of that, or are you excited every time to get to talk about stuff?
I mean, it's all been pretty different, which is kind of nice. Like on William's podcast, we talked about how spooky the woods are and how you shouldn't go into them and some related material to that. And on on the Slay House podcast, we talked more about existentialist horror. And in Raven's podcast, we talked about like indie horror and indie publishing. So it's been pretty fun. It's been all over the place, and I kind of like that.
That's good. William wants to know about, he wants to ask about the dinner at AuthorCon.
Oh my God. No. That is there. You will, no one will ever know what I had for dinner that night at AuthorCon.
Oh, is it a secret?
Certainly not Rob Atone. He will never know.
So you got,
it is a secret.
It's a secret. You have The Wild Dark that it's previously released, and then coming out August 3rd, your new one, The Wild Fall. The sequel. So these are all within the same universe, the Wild Oblivion universe. So is that a universe you've been working on for a long time?
Yes, it is. Sorry, I'm having a little bit of stuttering on my end, so that kind of... yes, okay. I started the universe back in 2018, 19, something like that. And have been kind of adding to it over time. So there are now 5 books and stories in the universe with at least another 2, possibly 3 coming. So, and it just gets a little more involved and deeper with each book.
Same characters throughout, or
fairly,
or is that a spoiler? Unless somebody dies, of course, but
no. The 2 big books, The Wild Dark and The Wild Fall, have, you know, kind of the majority of characters, and then the shorter stories have sort of like characters from those books.
Okay.
That they star, except for Dan and Andy. That's Karaoke Holiday. That one is just kind of totally out of left field and stars my 2 coworkers.
It stars your 2 coworkers?
They definitely do, and they love it. It's like being in a movie for them.
Cool. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So The Wild Fall comes out, what, just a couple of weeks from now, right?
It comes out August 3rd.
It's taking place, did I read that's correct? It's taking place 10 years after The Wild Dark. So what, for the whole span of the books in this series, like how many years are we talking?
So really the first book, and then like all 3 of the short stories that kind of break off from it take place within the same year.
Okay.
And then this one takes place 10 years after and pretty much stays, you know, exactly 10 years after. And 2 stories that I have coming up will be back, you know, back in that same first year that The Wild Dark takes place in.
Right.
And then the 3rd one, who knows? Still being worked out.
But before we get too far into the books, what is your sort of your elevator pitch for someone who hasn't read it before, unfamiliar? What would you say about this to entice them into this world?
So it is about an ex-cop who is trying to survive an apocalyptic forest that's taking over the world while being haunted by the ghost of her dead partner. That's my elevator pitch.
A lot going on there.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on. There's a lot to read into. Sometimes I'll replace the apocalyptic forest with forest purgatory, which kind of gives it a little more of that supernatural element, which is definitely part of the series. So, yeah.
I wanted to ask you, and you might say, no, Brad, you're an idiot, but are you a fan of Dungeons & Dragons at all?
I've never played any of it. I'm not like super knowledgeable about it. Mm-hmm. I did watch the newest movie, which I thought was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. But
wait, there's a movie about Dungeons and Dragons?
Oh yeah, yeah. It's got like big, what's Chris Pine's in it, and the girl from the Fast and the Furious movies, what's her name? Michelle Rodriguez. There's a bunch of people in it.
Yep. Hugh Grant.
Jake's just like, what?
The reason can I go ahead and say, Brad, you're an idiot? Or can I just go?
You can say that.
Since Catherine didn't say it, can I go ahead and say
the reason I asked that was because the story with like the woods encroaching and sort of like they kind of create this barrier. It reminded me of what is it? I have it over here. It reminded me of Curse of Strahd. There's a town called Barovia, and they're sort of trapped in the mist, but it's foresty and there's woods and stuff. That's the reason I asked.
Okay. No, I hadn't even heard of that, so that's really cool though.
Yeah, I like the wolves in it and the like you said, purgatory, like the woods are kind of creating a prison in a way, you know, trapping people off, sectioning people off. There's this isolation feel to it, which reminded me of that. So I was just curious if you were a fan of D&D at all or not.
Yeah, I mean, I know that there are like places around here that do campaigns. I've never done one. I would be totally up for it if I think we knew more people who did it. But
that's what the kids do in Stranger Things, right?
Yeah, they play Dungeons and Dragons. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. I think it'd be fun. This is completely off subject. I think it'd be fun to get a bunch of authors together and do it like live like this, like they do the Critical Role stuff or whatever.
Yes, that would be fun.
So is this a movie I need to put on my watch list?
Jay, you would hate it. You would absolutely hate it. Every minute of it.
Yeah. I thought it was pretty fun.
Well, Jay doesn't like fantasy stuff at all, so he would just be bored
of it. No, I could handle some dark fantasy stuff, because I mean, the Wild Dark, it teeters at times when some of the, you know, it's got the mixture of the horror, the dark fantasy together and all. As long as it's dark, it will keep my attention. It's just, I'm not going to be reading a 4,000 page book anytime soon that you have to read the other 10 books in that series before something happens. Okay. I can't do that. I could probably watch a fantasy movie more than I could read a fantasy book, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I
don't know. You might like the movie because it's more tongue in cheek than it is like super serious, invested in all the backstory and stuff.
Yeah. My wife may like it. I mean, she could watch that stuff. It's just, I don't know. Sorry, my mind starts wandering. Yeah, I know. We totally got tangent, what are we, like 14 minutes into this, 12 minutes into this? Usually I'm the one that gets us off track, but Brad totally brings up movies.
I just had to ask because it reminded me so much of that specific location in D&D. I just had to ask. So the answer was no. We'll move on.
So we have Catherine Silva here, writer of The Wild Dark, The Wild Fall, The Wild Oblivion book, but we want to know what you feel about Dungeons and Dragons and the movie and, you know, all that stuff. Yeah. Good job, Brad.
So was there any inspiration, you know, for this? Because you have a really cool mix of different things. You know, you have the ghosts in here, and then you have the apocalyptic setting, but then you also have the forest and almost this dark fantasy with the stuff going in inside the forest, like with the monolith and stuff. So was there any like specific starting point inspiration? Like, I want to tell a ghost story that morphed into this, or I'm scared of the woods, let's tell that kind of story, or?
I think so. Honestly, there's a video game that came out like 10 years ago ish called Limbo. It's an indie game. It's not as well known, but it's basically you wake up as a little boy and you're in the woods and you're trying to just solve all the puzzles and get out. And it's just a side scrolling platformer in black and white. And that was kind of the first inspiration. Was just, I love the setting in that game. And I loved kind of the ambient soundtrack and how dark it was, and how minimalist it was too. And from there, I just kind of added in elements, from other things that I was inspired by. There are some super creepy paintings by this Polish artist, Zdzisław Beksiński, that definitely had some inspiration. The TV show Fringe was an inspiration on the characters mostly. And I think it's kind of like those three things are the main thing, I guess.
So you're just absorbing inspiration from all over the place, every single possible thing. Yeah.
Yes. I'm like a sponge.
Was Limbo, he was like a silhouette character, right? And I'm pretty sure I had that on Xbox 360, I'm pretty sure. It was a fun game.
Yeah. And just like, and he died, the brutal deaths that would happen, you know, to this little kid.
Like the things could fall over and crush you, and I think you could fall on like
this was a real. How did I miss out on this game? What platform is this game on now?
It was on 360. I'm sure it was on Steam.
It's you can get it on Steam certainly. That's where I found it, and continue to play it as a computer game. And it's just it's really well executed.
And it was only like $5-10. It's not like a
not much.
Game that's like $60 or anything. It was a fun game. I do remember that. I want to go back and play that now that you've mentioned it. Christina knows Limbo was fun. She knows what it is.
Yeah.
So I can totally see now that you've mentioned that, the inspiration of that, you know, it's all kind of grayscale and that's kind of what it's like inside the forest, just kind of closing on you. That's cool.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. So for you, do you have a fear of the woods or getting lost in the woods or anything?
I wouldn't say I have a fear of it. I have been lost in the woods before. It's not fun.
Oh.
It's like we were trail running back when I decided I wanted to try and trail run. That didn't last. And it started getting dark and I ended up walking most of the time because I just wasn't like as in shape as some of these other people. And so I got separated from everybody. And it's a bike trail. It's a mountain bike trail. So there's just all these random offshoots everywhere. And so I couldn't find anybody.
You got separated or did they leave you behind?
It sounds like they just left you behind.
Yeah.
I told them to, though, because I was really embarrassed. They left me behind, but at my, at my direction. Mm-hmm. So I did eventually find my way out before it got pitch black, but didn't have a light source, didn't have really anything with me. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty scary, like the thought that like, oh hey, I could be out here after dark and there's no trail maps around and there's just all these different trails with different names that loop back on each other. Like,
well, that's your story right there. That's go ahead, write that. That's in your memoirs. So,
I mean, especially because once it gets dark there, everything looks the same. I mean, everything looks the same pretty much anyway, but especially when it gets dark, you could go in circles pretty much.
Yep.
So did you draw inspiration for that? That kind of sounds like the beginning of this one with like the missing girl.
No, I didn't. I didn't draw any inspiration from that. That was just kind of a thing that happened once. Just kind of as a kid, the woods were really like my place to hang out. Living in Maine, there's woods everywhere. And so I at like that fifth grade, sixth grade age, I would go out there with my friends. That would be like our after school thing to do, and we just kind of explore the woods. And so just being in the woods and checking things out has always been one of my fun things that I like to do. And I think they are just such a beautiful place to lose yourself in the daylight when you can. So I do work in an outdoor store. I'm a proponent for getting outside and enjoying nature. And ironically, I haven't been able to do much of that in the last few months because of just getting ready for the book to come out. But but I do love the woods and I do love writing about them because they can be just a playground for your imagination to run wild.
Did you know back in the fifth and sixth grade when you started hanging out in the woods, did you know back then you were going to use the woods for your inspiration in the future? Did you do any writing back then? Is that when you started your writing, fifth grade?
Oh, I drew picture books and made like picture books when I was a kid. There was no words. It was just like, oh, I'm telling a story and I'm drawing all these pictures and then we're going to staple them all together. And
yes.
So that was, and then just from there, I just like telling stories, however simplistic they were, usually about haunted houses and things like that. Mm-hmm. I think I wrote my first novel in seventh grade. And that was, it was really dumb, but.
You still did it, though. So that's cool.
Yeah.
Like novel length, like you oh, yeah. How many pages? Cool. So this is coming out, what, next year around Christmas time for us?
Yeah, it'll be about Peach who plays the piano, who wants to steal a magic sword.
Hey, I bet you could get a lot of kids to read that.
Oh, probably. Except, you know, there was some adult material, so yeah, oh, okay. Maybe not kids.
edit that part out.
Yeah.
I like the way in The Wild Dark, the first one of the two we're talking about this evening, the time jumps. And I'm always a fan mm-hmm. of the time jumps because, you know, it to me, it's a really cool way to tell the story, the history of something, because we meet Liz, the main character, and you just know there's so much going on with her. And you want to know, okay, well, why is she not working anymore as a detective, and what really happened with the marriage, what really happened with the partner, and then the time jumps. I'm just a big fan of that itself, and I just like the way it was utilized throughout this The Wild Dark. So what was your intentions with that? Was it just an easy way for you to figure out the way to tell the story without giving a history, or was that your intentions going into it, or did it just fall into your lap that it worked out best that way?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it was it just fell into my lap, but I also really like stories that have dual timeline writings. Those are some of my favorite books. And I read one before I wrote The Wild Dark that is called All the Birds Singing by E.V. Wilde that had like the most awesome use of time jumps in it. And it was like the stories in the past were told going backwards, and then the stories in the present were told going forward. And it was just so cool to me that somebody had taken that idea and sort of like did their own thing with it. And so I just wanted to explore the idea of doing a time jump in my own story. Right. Mine certainly wasn't as like innovative as hers was, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. Mm-hmm.
Like Jay said, you know from the beginning that something bad has happened to Liz, but then you slowly sort of peel those layers back as you go through, eventually leading up to, you know, whatever the event is, you know, without giving anything away. So like, there's almost this like built-in sense of dread along the whole way, because you know something bad's going to happen, you just don't know how or what it is yet. So I think that adds another sort of layer of depth to the story that you might not get otherwise if you're just sort of, you know, dumping a whole backstory in a chapter or something like that.
Yeah, I like the dread. Mm-hmm. I like the idea that there's just like bad things coming, more bad things coming.
Did this one end up the way you intended for it to end up originally, or did you, what are several changes throughout the whole writing process of it?
I mean, there were definitely changes. There were certainly points where I felt like I needed to add more of the supernatural element into mm-hmm. the book, mm-hmm. because I didn't think that I was spending enough time in the woods, really. So there's a whole like chapter or two that takes place in the woods that I added in. That's definitely like a deep dive into that sort of surrealist fantasy.
Right.
That was heavily inspired by those paintings. mm-hmm. And then, you know, that kind of just gives you a little bit of like what you can expect more of in the next book.
Right.
Yeah. Cause it was, you know, sort of up to that point, it was sort of this kind of cop procedural, and then, you know, this post-apocalyptic setting. And when she goes into the woods with the monolith and stuff, it's just like completely like super weird and strange. And, you know, like you said, that kind of dark fantasy stuff. Was that fun to write that? Because it was, chapter two is completely different than the rest of the book as far as like the setting and the tone and feel of it all. Was that fun to write that part?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love that.
It's great you made it wintertime, because so many horror stories, you know, you mix in snowstorms and winter time and just snow and cold. I think there's something about cold and horror to go together that just adds that extra element of everything. So since it's, you know, take a place in New England, you know, and they're you know, known for their cold winters, I just added an extra element that just, what was that?
Yeah,
just, like, it just added an extra element for me, extra layer to bring that eeriness and that dread along with it.
Yeah, I wrote a lot of it during the winter too. Like, winters are very long in Maine, so that's my, like, there's no reason for me to go outside right now. I can just hole up in my office and write about how scary it is outside.
I like the juxtaposition once you go into the woods, sort of going with that fantasy element. Like, it's like hot and humid and like a complete contrast to the winter that's outside, as opposed to when you go in the forest, it's like a completely different environment. So I like that it wasn't just cold like it was normally. You switched it up and made it this weird, strange, almost alien sort of landscape.
I wanted it to be unexpected, you know, like you're, especially those of us who, like, I've lived in New England, I've lived in Maine my entire life. So, and I really have only been to the southern states one time. So I would say I have an inability to handle humid, hot weather.
Don't ever come to Kentucky then, because you'll, it's horrible.
Yeah.
So I kind of wanted to show that a little bit in the book, just make this forest just kind of like, not inhospitable, but very like dramatically different than the New England winter outside.
And I love that you didn't really explain why what is going on is going on. Like, you sort of left it. I mean, it might happen later on in the series, but for the first book, at least, you didn't explain why the ghosts are coming back and why these woods are doing what they're doing. You know, there was sort of maybe clues that were given at the monolith, but it really didn't explain anything, at least from, you know, the reader's perspective. So I like that you didn't lay it all out and just, you know, info dump, explain everything, why everything is the way it is. I thought that was cool. You left some mystery to it.
Yeah. So how overall, how does this one, without, you know, spoilers, how does the first one, The Wild Dark, how does it start to tie in and transition to the one that, you know, we're kind of celebrate because it comes out in a couple of weeks here, The Wild Fall? How is that transition? What should people know about the connection? And should they read the Wild Dark first?
Go ahead and grab both of them. Buy book one and read book one.
I know. I'm trying to get you an extra sell here. You know, give us a little pitch. Yes, buy that first. So the connection is there. And is The Wild Fall set up so that you have to read the first one first? Because I remember you mentioned to us before that there's a lot of references to it, but let everybody know about those, the connection.
Yeah. So you really do need to read book one first. It's pretty, like, it leans, the second book leans very hard on the first book, and you will spoil, like, things will be spoiled for you if you just try and read the second one without reading the first. So, yeah. And basically a lot of what happens in the second one is, like, these characters have grown and changed based on their experiences from the first book. So to really, like, care about what's happening to them, you kind of have to go through all their trials and tribulations from book one. I mean, you can still care about them, but maybe you won't care as much. So,
you've been on that journey with them.
Yeah. So I do recommend people read The Wild Dark. I do recommend that people read Hallowed Oblivion, which is kind of like the spirited prequel to The Wild Dark. As far as the other ones go, like, that is up to you. If you like expanded universe stuff, you certainly can read Orchards and Dan and Andy's Scaryuki Holiday. They're definitely, like, they'll add to the universe, and they'll be characters who will have more stories in the future. So,
nice. Yes. So speaking of book one, The Wild Dark, and they might be sold out already, but you showed off on, I don't know, TikTok or Twitter or Instagram. You had a video were you unboxing the like special edition hardcover of it, which looks awesome, by the way.
Thank
the dust jacket, and the underneath the dust jacket, like the cover itself was like painted. It looked great. Are there any of those copies left? I know you said there's 10 left the other day.
Yes, there are copies left. If I'd been thinking, I would have brought one up with me so that I could show it off. But yes, there are about, I think there's 10 copies left. And they are all like alphabet edition, the Wild Dark with Orchards, and there's cocktail recipes in there. There's deleted scenes. There's music playlists.
It's like getting a special DVD with all the the director's cut and all the behind the scenes stuff. That's pretty cool.
And it's a unique layout. And the covers are different. Like the covers are totally different. There's a jacket cover and then there's an underneath cover. Yeah. Both designed by me.
Nice.
And yeah, I'm pretty proud of it. It's my first time doing a special edition book, and it came out really nice.
Just from watching the video on my tiny phone screen, it looked fantastic. I especially love the dust jacket, looked great, but when you took it off, the painted hardcover itself looked really, really good.
Sort yeah,
the it's sending it sort of into the mist through the woods. It looked cool.
Yeah, it was that's a photo. It's actually a stock photo, believe it or not. and I had used that photo actually for part of my short story Orchards, which is in the book also, but it just like, it screamed that it was like the right aesthetic for that under the laminate cover. So, so yeah, it's just black and white and looks pretty sleek.
It looks really like good. It. So it's not just a hardcover. So there's extra goodies in there as well. So even more incentive to go pick up the special edition, the limited edition. What was the process doing like the hardcover with the dust jacket and stuff, as opposed to, you know, just the normal paperback? Was that like through a different printer or?
No, same printer.
Okay.
Yeah. Same printer. They had just started doing dust jackets, I think, with laminate covers underneath, like that. That wasn't an option before. But you basically have to design two different covers. So they give you the PDF that shows like the parameters for the laminate one, and then you get the dust jacket one also. And so I just built those covers in my very archaic Adobe photo elements from like 2007. And it came out looking pretty good. So,
well, I have the old Photoshop. I think it's like Adobe CS2, which is like from like back in 2006 is what I use. That's cool that it's like, you know, it's, you're putting it out yourself and it's a hardcover with a dust jacket. Cause like Amazon, they do it. And it's just
normally the indies with Amazon, all it's just right on the actual,
on the cover. So it's cool to have a dust jacket.
The cover. Looks, yeah.
It looks really good.
Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah. It was a lot of work, and it could have, I was really worried that it was not going to print well. Like I'm a worrier. So I just automatically am like, oh my God, it's going to suck so hard.
Is that just for the wild, the first
just,
one?
Just for the first one right now. Wild
Are we doing the second one? Or did I just convince you to do it? Or
there is actually a hardcover for book two, which has not been approved yet by Ingram, because they're just not into approving things lately. And hopefully that I have the hardcover set up so that it will release later in the month of August. So when that link goes up, I will share it, and that will be an option too.
Is that also going to be like a special edition with a dust jacket, or just
It does have a dust jacket. It's not a special edition. And I, you know, maybe in the future I will release a A special edition that's both books in one. I haven't decided. That might be, that's a lot of work.
Oh, yeah.
Because that would be a long like
book, too, though.
Because I mean, like, yeah, 700 page book.
Yeah, because the first one is what, almost 400, right?
Almost 400, yeah.
Yeah.
The special edition is like close to 500.
Okay.
It's about 500 pages, yeah. I think. So, yeah.
So you mentioned the special edition has deleted scenes. Is that
it does?
Are those scenes that you just felt like wouldn't work with the regular edition, or were they something that you really liked? You just wanted to put in because it was too long for this one, or? Go ahead. Yeah. Sorry.
No. That's okay. What was the rest of your question?
I was just like, because usually, you know, with, I don't know, books don't have deleted scenes, and, you know, they cut it and they forget about it, but they don't ever bring it back. And, you know, oh, this is what, you know, you missed out on that was left on the cutting room floor. So just what was for you, why did you want to bring these back and that were left out of the original edition?
So they were, I think I chose 4 scenes. And a couple of them, one of them was like the original ending that I had written that the editor thought needed to be changed. And I agreed. So we changed it. But then I wanted to throw it back in there just to, like, you know, give people some idea of what my original thought had been and why writing it was so traumatic. And there, I think another scene was from a version of the book that I had started writing, and I kind of cut it because it wasn't really going anywhere. Another scene I wrote because it was really good character building, and that was really it. And it's a Halloween party. And then I honestly cannot remember what the fourth scene is. But
it's okay. The people have to buy it and read it to figure out what the last scene is.
How are these put in there? Just at the end, or are they sprinkled in throughout the story?
They're put in towards the end. They're after. I think they're after the short story.
Gotcha.
Does it say like this should go in, you know, this part of the book, or are they just thrown in at the end?
Nope. Okay. They are put in chronologically of when like they would happen, but.
So that's cool. So yeah, definitely go pick up the hardcover edition of this because it looks really, really freaking cool.
Yeah.
And then you can buy the next one when it comes out.
See how that works? Yeah.
See how it works. So there's, like Jay mentioned earlier, there's a time jump, you know, between this one and this one, there's 10 years. Was that, that's a big jump in time. Was that always the plan, or why did you want to have such a big jump in time between the two?
It was the plan. I pretty much started writing the second book right after I finished the first one because I knew that Liz's story wasn't finished. And I wanted there to be a time jump because I wanted to show how the world had changed in 10 years. And I also wanted to show how the characters had changed in 10 years. Just a new opportunity to bring in new characters, to showcase how our characters had grown and changed. And then also just like how they are surviving in a world that is fairly woods.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Raining.
Yeah. The surviving parts, what I was kind of looking at the most, how they survived, what happened in the first one, and where they are now, and how it's kind of stayed with them those 10 years that's passed, and how they've had to adjust their life because of it. So, yeah.
Is it fun to create this, you know, this alternate reality like this, you know, this,
it's
post-apocalyptic, but it's something like completely different. It's not like a atomic war or zombies or, you know, the normal post-apocalyptic sort of tropes. It's something like completely unique.
It's a quiet apocalypse, really. I mean, it's like,
that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
And that's very unlike most apocalypses. apocalypse says, because they're all about, I mean, most of the time it's all about destruction and mm-hmm. murder and bloodshed and terrible things happening. Right. The idea that there's just these woods that are overtaking the land that really don't stop for anyone or anything. It is just kind of like the world's being swallowed and no one can really hear the terror that it's creating. So, and I liked that aspect too, because it's focusing so much more on the quiet horror, the slow burn horror versus a lot of action horror, which I do like to write a lot, but I really like writing the dread too. Yeah. The grief and the dread.
I like that slow burn because it's giving you time to, it kind of attacks you when you least expect it because it's such a slow burn. And then when something happens, you're like, oh shit, I didn't realize that was going to happen. You know, that's pretty cool. I like that.
But you have a good mix of action scenes in here though. You know, with the main character Liz, she's a cop. And then you have, you know, stuff once it, you know, all hell is broken loose. There's a lot of stuff going on with the initial, I guess, panic and all that stuff. So you did a good mix of action plus the existential slow dread, like this force it and you can't stop. Like it's not like they're going and chopping the trees down and burning it back. Like that doesn't seem to do anything. Nope. So it's like something that they just can't control. Like maybe with a zombie outbreak, they can find a cure for it eventually, but this seems like something completely different.
Yeah. I do like writing action scenes. Like my whole first series that I wrote was this like vampire action adventure thing with a lot of like conspiracy theory, Da Vinci Code stuff going on. But that one is action. And, and so this writing this whole series was different. And I think I kind of got hooked on it to a point that I don't want to write anything else, which is maybe a problem.
I could see that because do you feel like there's so many other options for this series, or do you just think that you can't really change your mind and brain to work on something else because you're so wrapped up into this series? Why would that be such a problem to change gears and go back to the vampires and stuff?
I mean, it's definitely I do know that I want to work on other things, but I have such a hard time letting go of these characters because I love them so much. Yep. And that's kind of why I'm like, oh, and I have a short story that's coming out in in October. And then I have another one that's coming out next spring, and maybe I'll write another book. Yeah. And I just can't get myself away from it.
So you've invested so much time and passion and work in these characters that you got to stick with them and you need to follow through with them. And these are, you know, so close to your heart. So, yeah, I could definitely see that.
Yeah, it's
hard. Even your short stories with other things, are those related to this world as well? Or are they just something
different? There's a novella. There's two short stories and a novella that are in this universe also. And then there is another novella. I think it's going to be a novella that's coming out in October. And then there's going to be another short story next spring.
It's the Catherine Silva universe.
It is. Yeah.
With the orchards, is that a novella or is that a short story?
That's a short story. And it's kind of a weird... it's a weird like poetry like what's the there's poetry, there's like snippets in there too, it's weird. I don't know how
that's
to
good describe enough because that's what we like. We like the weird.
Weird's,
so.
Weird's good.
Like there's typography, like and black and white imagery, and
It's like a hodgepodge of everything.
It's kind of like a weird mixed media thing that I was really inspired to work on last year. So I just did it and put it out there, and I think like 5 people bought it.
And that is in the Wild Oblivion universe, right?
It is. Yeah, it is it's kind of like the first direct sequel to The Wild Dark. And it does take place like immediately after it ends. So
there, in the beginning, I don't know, it's like 50, 60 pages into this one, they go to the McLaughlin Orchards. Is that related to Orchards, the story at all, or are they completely separate?
It's not. Orchards are a theme, though, in the series. And like that, especially that short story, like makes you kind of notice them a little bit more. So, there's definitely a reason that there is an orchard at this particular house that they.
Well, you're going to make it so people no longer want to go camping in the woods. And you're going to make it so nobody wants to go to any kind of orchards anymore. Like, I can see some backlash here.
I'm like, I like to make the things that you love inhospitable.
Exactly. Like, how do you make an orchard scary? Well, let's just talk to Catherine Silva about this, and she can tell you how. So, yeah.
So, on top of all the woods encroaching, and, they're a horrible place to go into, and there's wolves in there. On top of all that, you have everyone seeing ghosts. Just throw that
wolves
in
and ghosts. That
wolves and ghosts.
Yeah,
I think I tweeted the other day. It was like wolves, ghosts, and the woods. Oh my! Like lions, tigers, and bears. I thought that was cool, but
pretty great.
So, and like we had Ai Zhang on a recent episode, and she had a very different take on sort of a ghost story, and yours is also a very different take on the traditional, haunted house story or cursed object kind of story where something is haunted or whatever. It's almost everyone is haunted, like the whole population, as far as we know from the characters' perspectives, like 80% of the world was haunted
by ghosts.
So what was the idea behind that, because that's really cool and different than your typical, very isolated haunted house story where everyone is seeing this stuff?
Well, it does, a lot of it does have to do with kind of the mythos of the series, which is very different from, the heaven and hell and limbo that most people know. And it is basically that, like, this forest is where all spiritual entities go when they die. So the idea that like somebody could be haunted by the ghost of somebody they know is extremely likely. There's just kind of this thin veil that separates the two. And for whatever reason, the veil tears open. And so that just kind of lets loose all of these ghosts that have been wandering in this, purgatory forest. And what's, the first thing they're going to do, they're going to go back to where they remember themselves last being. They're going to go back to, who they remember being with. And for whatever reason, it ends up being like most everybody in the world, because that is human connection, or
I'm not giving anything away, James. That's like the main thing is everyone's haunted. Yes. That's not really a spoiler. I don't think. I think it probably says it on the back of the book somewhere.
What's been the what's been the reactions of people reading the one that's going to come out in a couple of weeks? I mean, are they liking the fact that the way it's a follow-up to the previous one, they like the connections, or I mean, I think you probably sent a lot out, some advanced readers to people, right? Or
yeah, I did. Okay. This is like, I made the mistake with the first book. I definitely did not send out enough. Right. So this time I wanted to rectify it, and I sent out like as many as I could. So I think I've gotten back almost 20 reviews on Goodreads. Okay. And they all seem to be pretty positive. It seems like people are really liking the 10 years in the future jump. Yeah. And there does seem to be quite a bit of confusion, because I had stated that this was the final book in the series. And there are a lot of people who think that there is a book 3 coming. And now I've started to be like, well, maybe there should be a book 3.
Or spinoffs. I mean, there's a lot of ways you could go with that. So
it's totally messed with my brain. maybe like, it's a little weird to think this way, but those people might have made it so that I now have to write a third one.
But as of now, though, this is the final book, as far as like
as the main of now, novels. That as is of now. The final book. Yeah,
tomorrow could be change.
There could be an origin story somewhere. There could be one of the characters going off on a detour. Look, there's several ways we could do this.
I mean, that is what all of the short stories and novellas are like. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you've gotten some good blurbs recently. I know Clay McLeod Chapman blurbed it. I know a few other bigger author names have blurbed it. So that's cool as well that you're getting some bigger names on there.
Yeah, I one thing I was really not expecting was I sent out a lot of blurb requests for this one, because I was betting on the fact that not everybody was going to be able to read it. And it's a lot to ask people to read 2 books, if they haven't read the first one. And the majority of people I asked said yes. And
that's cool.
Have given me extraordinarily nice blurbs. There's still another one that I haven't shared yet that I will be sharing this weekend.
Keeping the secrets close.
Yeah.
But here's 700 pages. Could you please read 700 pages and give me a nice blurb, please?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it just like, I can't say enough nice things to, Clay and Tim and Bev, Catherine, Daniel, like everybody that has read it so far, Mike. Just really awesome. Kind of kills me a little bit. Just like when you write something and you put it out there, you're always scared
right. To
have somebody, be like,
it's a very vulnerable situation, because I mean, you're putting your heart and soul, blood, guts, and your tears into this and stuff. Now you're sending it out there to the world. Yeah. Too. So,
yeah.
And that just shows to how cool and supportive the horror community is of each other. That people are willing to take on 700 pages to give you a 2-sentence blurb. I mean, that's cool.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to make light or anything. That's really cool. That
it's so cool. And it's so much more than I was expecting. And, this community has been really one of the nicest communities that I have joined since becoming a writer. I can't even begin to tell you how incredible it's been.
Yeah. We sort of joke about it a lot, like kind of tongue in cheek way, but all the horror authors they write all this nasty stuff, but they're like the nicest people in real life, which I think is true. A lot, like all the horror people I've met, whether it's other booktubers or authors, they've just been like the most genuinely nice people in person.
Thank you, Brad. I appreciate that.
You're welcome, Jay. I've never met you in person, Jay, so you don't count. Like, I met Clay at a reading he did, and he was just like super like positive and like super excited that everyone was there. And like, he knew me when I walked in. That's not trying to brag, but like, he took the time to recognize who I was, which he didn't have to do that. Like, I'm nobody compared to him. It's his event and all that stuff. But it was just cool. And he was a super cool guy. And all the other people I met, everyone's just super nice and really supportive of each other and everything like that. Not to get all sappy and everything.
But it's so true though. Like, I went to the Merrimack Valley Halloween Book Festival last year as a buyer, because I really just wanted to go see everybody and buy books and everything. And I met some of the most awesome people there and got invited to, you know, the dinner afterward and got to spend time talking to people and getting to know people. It's actually where I met Mike Clark, and it just was a lot of fun. And I don't know if I hadn't gone to that, I probably would not have had as many good connections as I have now. So
Mike's fun. Yeah. We had
him. Mike's a cool guy.
Yeah. I love Mike. He's awesome.
So do you get the opportunity to go to a lot of conventions and stuff for like book related things?
I try to, but it's a lot of money.
I
don't know how people go to these author cons and conventions. And...
Like author con that's an essential one now. Like I went to the first one, loved it, had an even better time at the second one. I'm definitely going to the third one.
Seems like there's so many different ones. Like every couple of months, there's some kind of like convention happening. I'm like, I don't know how you can up and travel to some of these places.
And that's like, if you can sell enough books or make enough money in your day job to justify that, great. Awesome. I salute you. There is no way that's happening over here. Like, the cost to drive to Virginia and do a show, it's a lot.
How long of a drive was it for you? Because I was thinking about going. It was a 10-hour drive for me. Of course, I didn't go, but I was thinking about it.
More than that. It's like, what did we do? We left Wednesday night after work, drove to Massachusetts. That's like a 4-hour, 5-hour drive. Stayed the night, and then it was another 10 hours from Massachusetts to Virginia. So
I'd have to stop every 45 minutes to find a bathroom. It's just like, I just can't do it. Like, it's rough to just drive to Virginia Beach for a vacation. The kids in the back. It's just, no, I can't.
I am going to try to go to Scares the Care? Or maybe it's OtherCon next October, because it's in St. Louis and that's only like 4 hours away.
Yeah, there's two. There's going to be the one in Virginia, and then there's going to be the one in St. Louis, which is awesome. I'm so glad that they're expanding, because it's a great charity and it definitely could use more exposure.
So I'm definitely going to try to go that way. That's not too bad, I don't think. 4 hours. I think I can manage that.
You want to try to squeeze in a little short game here to kind of loosen us up, because I want to get into some of the history and stuff. So go ahead.
You are doing an event at Little Ghost Book soon, right? Or has that happened already?
Yes. No, it's happening. It's August 6th at Little Ghosts, and I will be there from between 1 and 3 p.m. Signing copies of the book and maybe do a little reading. I'm really excited because it's my first launch at a bookstore ever, and it'll be my second time going to Canada. So I got my passport for it. I'm just so excited.
That's scary, going to another country for things.
For a book thing.
Oh yeah, and the drive is going to be fun too, because I have to basically drive to my aunt's house in upstate New York over the course of 2 days. And then get up really early, drive to Canada, park, meet up with some very cool people, and then drive back to my house.
They're not for you, Chad, because you're not allowed in. That's why.
Is it going to be longer for you to go to Little Ghost Books than it was to AuthorCon? Is it a longer trip to Little Ghost Books?
It might actually be about the same.
About the same? Wow.
Yeah.
That's exciting, though, because Little Ghost Books, that's, I'd love to visit there. That's, it looks like a super cool store.
Yeah, I think it'll be my first and last visit for a while.
But Chad, you should definitely go to a con. Everyone can play with your luscious locks, brush your hair for you all day.
I don't think they allow cannibals in.
He's going to hate you. He already hates you, Jay.
Me and Chad are best friends. Come on.
So, Catherine, do you want to do some horror movie trivia? Does that sound fun?
Sure.
Do you ever use horror movies as any kind of inspiration for your writing, or
some?
Okay, so we're not we're not really coming out of left field with this. We're going to.
I mean, to bring up
I heard William talked about the show the other day. What's the show? It's on like Stars or whatever. Has the guy from the Matrix in it?
Yes. Well, yeah,
they're showing the first season on Prime. Is where I'm catching it. But yeah, I got to get Stars to see the second season. Yeah.
Is that good? It looks really fantastic, it's but I don't so have Stars.
Good. It's okay. Such a good show.
Yeah, Prime though, don't you?
Yeah, we still.
The first, season's on. The first season's on Prime because I watched the first episode. So, you know, you'll watch the first season on Prime, and it rope you in. You have to get Stars to watch the rest. That's the way it's
going. I am just gonna say, if you get the MGM Plus, which is where you can watch the entire thing, you also get to watch the movie. The Dungeons and Dragons movie.
All right. Jay.
Yeah.
Double whammy. That's totally worth it now, Jay.
Yeah. That's how I'll spend it to my wife for the extra charge each month. That's
The Dungeons and Dragons movie was totally worth it.
There you go.
All right, let's do some horror movie trivia.
All right, are we competing here? What are we doing?
We'll ask Catherine, and if she doesn't know, we'll let Jay take a stab at it. See, take a stab. See what I did there, Jay?
I gotcha. We're here all week.
All right, so I don't know how easy or hard these questions are going to be, but we'll see what happens. All right, question number one. What is widely considered to be the first horror movie ever made?
Oh, God.
Is there a multiple choice? Or
no multiple choice. I'll give you the year.
Is it like Nosferatu?
It's not that one. This is, no. It was made in 1898.
Dude. Oh,
God. Yeah, I don't know.
So Nosferatu was a good guess.
Wait,
Jay.
1898. Dr. Caligari, that one. That you know what I'm talking about?
Caligari, what?
What? The doctor one. The cabinet
Dr.
of...
Moreau?
Doctor, the cabinet of some doctor, you know?
No, it's not that. It's called... This is a great start. It's the House of the Devil.
Dude, nobody knows that.
The House of the Devil, which is a movie I've never heard of.
Wait, I'm not allowed to do these questions anymore, but you're gonna come up with that one.
We'll get a good one next. Hopefully she's seen this movie, or this one's not gonna be a good one either.
God.
What kind of allergy does Charlie have in Hereditary?
Oh God, I haven't seen Hereditary. There's a whole bunch of horror movies. Yes,
the only thing I remember from Hereditary is the girl's head falling off. That's all I remember. The rest was like,
I know what happens in the movie just based on like some of the stuff I've heard, but I didn't even know she had an allergy.
I saw the movie. I didn't know there was an allergy.
Jay fell asleep 20 minutes in.
After the girl's head fell off looking out the window, I was done. I was like, okay, that should have been
spoiling the movie, Jay. She hasn't seen
that's
the movie.
That's in the previews,
but I know that that happens.
Yeah, I think that's in the previews. I mean...
maybe this one will be easier. In which state does the Blair Witch Project take place?
Oh, shit.
It's up in your neck of the woods, Catherine. I'll give you that much.
New Hampshire?
Mm-mm. It starts with an M, so you have two possible guesses. Nope, wrong one.
Oh, come on!
Jay, do you know which one it takes place in? Blair Witch Project?
Maine?
No, it's Maryland.
Maryland? Hey, it's in Maryland. Okay.
It's Maryland, yeah. Let's see.
Let's just give Brad a round of applause for these questions here real quick, you know.
Hush. This is the easy one. Who directed the acclaimed horror movies Get Out and Us?
Okay, that's Jordan Peele. I know there that one. Yeah.
Get a win under our belt. All right. Who plays Chucky's love interest, Tiffany, in The Bride of Chucky?
Oh, God. I can see her face.
Oh, it's the poker player, isn't it? It's
blonde. I can't think of her name.
Her name starts with a J. Starts with a J.
Yeah, it's not gonna come to me. I haven't seen any of those movies.
I don't. This might be a bad opinion. I don't really like the Chucky movies. I never liked any of them. Jay, do you have a guess who played the love interest?
I was thinking somebody else. I was thinking the one that plays poker, the celebrity poker.
Jenny something or other.
Jenny's the first. Jennifer's the first name. Yeah. Last name starts with a T.
Tilly. Jennifer.
Yeah,
Tilly.
Jennifer Tilly.
Yeah, she's blonde.
I don't have any idea. Is she blonde?
Oh, I don't know.
I think so.
Probably in the movie she's.
That's
blonde.
Who I'm thinking of. Jennifer Tilly. She plays poker too, I think.
She does, Jay.
Look, when you watch a celebrity poker at 2 o'clock in the morning at ESPN, yes, yeah. Her, there's another celebrity I know of that plays. Okay.
All right. Which horror movie stars Jennifer Love Hewitt, Freddie Prinze Jr., Sarah Michelle Gellar, and Ryan Phillip?
I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Part two. Yeah,
that's a good movie. I like that movie.
Well, no, it's called I Still Know What You Did Last
Summer. He's got like a weird like fish hook or something. Anyone that would he had?
Yeah.
There are two serial killers at the center of the Silence of the Lambs movie. What are their names?
Hannibal Lecter.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh God.
He puts the lotion on its
skin. Yeah. No. I know. And it's the guy who plays the police chief in Monk. I can't think of, I can't think of what his name is, though.
His first name is an animal. If that gives you any clues.
No, because now I'm just thinking of like random animals that make it no sense.
It's Big Boy and
Alligator Allen. Jay, do you know?
No, it's been a while since I've seen that.
It's Buffalo Bill. Buffalo Bill.
Buffalo Bill.
Dude.
Like Donkey popped into my head randomly.
Donkey Dan.
Donkey. Yeah.
Let's see. Passengers must survive what kind of outbreak in the movie Train to Busan?
Zombie
outbreak. I haven't seen that one yet, but everybody says that's a great zombie movie.
Such a good movie. Lots it is blood. A really good one.
Do you really need to pay attention to the subtitles? Because I'm bad about reading subtitles and not actually watching what's happening on screen.
Well, there's a sub-story. Subplot, yeah.
I need to read it.
Great effects, great. I think it's, you know, I like foreign horror films, so
it's Korean, right? Is it Korean?
I think so.
It is. Yeah.
Let's see. Here's an easy one. What is the name of the killer in the Saw franchise? The little puppet and the guy behind him. Remember his name? I really like the Saw movies.
I haven't watched any of them. Like really? This is the bad thing is I have not seen a ton of classic horror movies. I haven't seen any of the Saw movies. I haven't seen any of the like Halloween or
what?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My
goodness. We need to give you a little homework. You're leaving this show with homework, by the way.
We should just do some live watch parties and watch these horror movies.
That would be
fun. The ending to the first Saw is like one of my favorite all-time endings to any horror movie ever.
And then you have to, like, once you get into the Saw series, like, you won't know right away, but, like, part two and part three.
Well, okay, now I see his answer. I thought of it before I saw his answer.
Did you? I'll give you credit. Jigsaw?
Yeah.
Yes. And anyone who says they could see the ending of the first Saw movie coming is full of shit. There's no way anyone saw that coming.
Like the thing I love about the Saw movies, like even if you take out the blood and guts and the gore, there's really great psychological puzzle kind of movies. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even if you took away all the gore.
The first two are the best, I think.
Well, you know, two and three take place at the same time.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. So
the ending to two is really good too, because it sort of loops back around, which was
the ending of three, you see the ending of two, kinda. So that confusion.
We'll do
Okay.
We'll do two more.
Oh boy.
Which actor which actor appears in all of these movies? The Purge movies, Sinister, and The Black Phone.
Is it Ethan Hawke?
Ethan Hawke, yep.
Was that just a guess, or did you
Well, no, I've seen Black Phone, and I know that he's in Sinister.
Did you make it through Black Phone?
Yeah.
Okay. I made it 10 minutes. And I was like, okay.
I liked it. I saw it in theaters.
I finished it, but I was unimpressed. I think it was too much hype. It was okay, but it was too much hype, I think.
It was predictable. It was extremely predictable, but seeing it on the big screen was like awesome. I think if I had seen it just like watching it at home, I kind of would have been like, meh. Also,
maybe that's what's the problem, because
I watched it
on Peacock. Yeah, and I started watching it. I maybe got 20 minutes into it, and I was just like, this is just going nowhere fast for me. So,
like, I enjoyed it, but I think it was overhyped. So, I think my expectations were too high.
Mm-hmm.
But Sinister, that is like the most creepy horror movie, I think. It's like super disturbing. That movie freaks me out.
It's sick in some spots. Yeah. It was rough in a few spots.
Just the mask. There's like the one scene where he's off in the bushes and it's just really tiny and they like zoom in on him. I don't know. That one freaks me out.
I haven't seen that one either.
It's super good. It's really, really unsettling.
It is.
It's almost like there's different snuff films within it, which it's super creepy.
I have a thing when like kids are involved. I'm like, it hurts.
Right, we'll do one more. We'll get a good one. This one should be good. The Losers Club reunites after how many years in It Chapter 2?
26?
27. It's close. Close enough.
Damn it.
Close enough.
Those were winners, Brad.
Hey, at least she knew some of them, Jay. I'm like, the one you did, like, they didn't even celebrate Christmas. It's fine. I think that's the whole point of this. Games is just to be an absolute mess. It makes people laugh.
Yeah. It was good. I appreciate it.
I definitely recommend you watching at least the first two Saw movies, because they are fantastic. Okay.
And the first two Halloween movies.
Yep.
She hasn't watched Halloween.
No, there's so many.
Yeah.
It's not even funny.
Are you a big horror movie fan, though?
Some. I am very, like... I don't know. Certain horror movies. I'm not a huge slasher fan when it comes to horror movies, but I do like Scream. That was my first slasher. Like, I like that franchise.
The mask is what draws me. I love the shape of the mask.
Yeah.
I like that they make fun of themselves. That's
the stab movies. Like. Yeah, it's very, very meta.
Yeah. I think the last two, part 5 and 6, you know, I was the one, I was like, why are they doing this again? Why? And I was actually mildly impressed with both of them, that the way they made it very meta and just made fun of themselves throughout. So,
is 6 the newest one that's in New York?
Yeah. Yeah. You can get it on Paramount right now.
I haven't seen 5 and 6. I saw 4 and I was very disappointed with 4.
I don't think I've seen 4.
I think that's the last one I saw was 4.
And I do want to see 5 and 6. I just haven't had a chance to yet.
They're both on, I don't know if you stream Paramount or not, but they're both on Paramount.
I need to get Paramount mostly because I need to get my Picard fix. And I haven't had it yet. Yeah. But
Jay completely tuned out just then. You said Star Trek, and he's like, what?
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I just said I watch both.
Okay.
We were talking earlier. You mentioned how you like the quiet horror. What would you tell someone that type of horror you write? Would you say I write the quiet, slow burn horror, or is there like, do you have a different name for it, a different style for it, if you're trying to get someone to read your material?
I say I write grief horror,
Grief, okay.
And existentialist horror. Those are kind of my two things, I guess, is the best way to describe it. I like to make people think about how little they matter in the universe.
The way you tackle grief in the first one with, you know, all the ghost stuff, it's sort of different because, you know, their loved one is back, but there's nothing they can really do. Like, they can talk, but there's nothing, there's no, the physical touch, they can't touch them, they can't really interact at all. So it's almost like you're teasing them with, like, you know, dangling the carrot in front of them that they can never catch up to. It's almost like, it's kind of sick and sadistic in the way doing it like that.
Yeah, a little bit. I just like writing sad stuff. That's all.
What's your process when you're writing this? Do you ever write out of order, or is everything got to be straight in order? Do you have notes for every little part for it?
I'm not a note taker generally. I figure out the ending first, and then I write and get those characters to the ending.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we've had quite a few people say that, actually. That's pretty interesting. Yeah. You said that. So
yeah, I don't know why. I just like figure the ending is just kind of like the, oh yeah. I like the idea of, you know, this character ending up here. Mm-hmm. So how am I going to get him there? And then it's all up here until then. And like, maybe I'll make some notes about like specific dates or ages, or, you know, if I'm creating a city, I'll create, write down names for things. But otherwise, all the like plot stuff that's going on, all of the like characterization stuff that's going on, I just kind of keep it in my head and then pull from there.
So I wanted to ask, in book two, you have, you know, the main character, Liz, and I don't know what her age is. She's what, in her 30s or 40s or so, probably.
She's, yeah, in that book, she'll be 40s. Yeah.
And then you have a teenage perspective character who's also a female. I won't name who it is because I don't want to give anything away, but was it difficult to go back and forth between these different perspectives with two different age women and try to make the teenager feel like a teenager and the adult feel like adult? That's like, but sometimes in books they write kids, but the kids feel and act like they're adults, like way older than they should. So was that tough to make the teenager feel like a teenager?
It was. But like in my job, I typically work with a lot of teenagers. The, you know, summer sales season always presents ripe 16-year-olds in their first summer job. So a lot of the drama with those kids is good inspiration.
And there's, I don't know if I should say it right. There's something with the first book, like with the ghosts, they're coming back and it's like everyone's going crazy and freaking out because, you know, that's something unnatural. But there was one character, and it's just a minor side character that's only in a couple pages. But I like that you flipped the perspective of it. Like, he was upset that he couldn't see the ghost of his loved one. So I like that you did it from a different perspective and what happened with him. So it's cool, just the different takes you had on that same situation was cool. It wasn't just the same for everybody. Well, this person was mad. Oh, my loved one didn't come back, so that's upsetting me. Why was I left out when everyone else was able to see that? I thought that was a cool take on what was going on with everybody.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about what's so interesting about having like ghosts be part of the apocalypse is that it is it's a grief it's a very grief forward apocalypse, but also like there's so many avenues to explore for how people respond to it. And I had a moment where like Liz is reading through all these newspaper articles and and things, and like is sort of catching herself up on what's been going on the last few months with everybody else that does not see ghosts, just kind of like mainstream media, how they're pitching everything. And like, part of the reason I think I can't get away from this series is because there's so many awesome ideas to utilize of like individuals who are having their take on what's happening. And it can be so completely different from all of our main characters over here and what they're experiencing. And I got to kind of delve into it a little bit more in the sequel with the, you know, the group of people who shall not be named, but I've teased them a little bit. So yeah, I wish I could do a little more exploration, I guess, is the thing. Mm-hmm. So
is that fun for you to get to explore, even with like, you know, that character I mentioned, he's just a minor, you know, background character. It's only in there for a couple pages, but get to explore these different, I guess, reactions and scenarios and stuff with these, all these other characters like that.
Yeah. Like, we kind of get into it a little bit with like how people who do not see ghosts have reacted to the people who do see them. But there is an entire like book that could be written from that perspective of like, when the apocalypse is happening, how are these characters dealing with all the entire sphere of like, well, these people are seeing people that are not there. And at the same time, everybody can see these wolf creatures. Everybody can see the woods. Like, how is that messing with their minds?
Yeah. You kind of touched on that briefly with the doctor in the first book. Cause she doesn't see, but she, well, how do you explain the wolves and everything? And you know, she didn't really want to go into it, but that would be cool to see it from that character's perspective, like a longer story. Like, everyone's gone crazy. Why have they gone crazy all of a sudden? Mm-hmm. That's what
I connect it with the wolves, I think.
With the wolves?
Yeah. They were misunderstood.
Yes. Soul eating wolves.
Yes. They were just misunderstood, I thought. Yeah. They're my favorite part of the book, actually.
So are you a big fan of ghost stories in general? Do you like ghost stories?
I do. Yeah. Yeah. I am. I like haunted house stories. I like when people can utilize ghosts in new ways as well, but I'm definitely a sucker for the haunted house.
Do you believe in ghosts yourself?
No.
No, me either.
No. I do have a really interesting experience of joining a ghost hunting adult ed class.
Oh, yeah.
I would do that years ago, and oh my god, it was bad.
Were they hardcore? Like,
no,
they were no, totally against
but
it.
That or? Made it better. Like, these were the weekend ghost hunters.
Okay,
the weekend warriors,
and they were like, yeah, we do this in our spare time. You know, we have jobs, but we're teaching an adult ed course on it at the local high school. So like, we're using Wikipedia as our citing sources.
Wow, that's the red flag right there.
And
Wikipedia.
And we've got these pictures of some great spots.
Yeah.
that kills Jay. Look at the orb. It's like the dust floated through the camera. Yeah.
Yes, the orbs. Sorry, not
the
spots.
The orbs. It's like, you know what? It's just a dusty air. That's what it is. It's clean your bed.
And but the team, I think the team was great because it was like this husband wife who had the worst luck on the planet. Like bad shit kept happening to their house, to themselves. Uh-oh. Like, in this, like, maybe you should look at the karma here. maybe like don't go chasing ghosts and focus on the fact that your house is falling apart and the fact that this guy had a major heart attack while he was teaching the class. And but then the other parts of the team were this the pinkologist. I can't remember her real name, but she would call herself the pinkologist and she would sit there and eat chocolate the entire time. And then there was their tech guy who made all kinds of lewd, crass jokes and made a like a ghost sensing machine out of an old cat tower and some tuning forks. And
I'm glad you said that. That always amused me from some of these shows where they're ghost hunting. Like they have these special equipment. First of all, there's no shop for that. Okay. You're making it yourself. You're creating yourself. You're just no shop down on the corner, Ghost R Us, to go to get the get the equipment. I remember when the movie White Noise came out with Michael Keaton. I was working in radio at the time, so I was like, you know what? This is pretty cool. I'm gonna try to get some white noise. I'm gonna try to get some voices because I had the recording equipment and all, like, you know, and I tried it. I'm like, hey, is anybody in here? Blah blah blah. There was nothing, all right? And you don't need the special Ghostbusters kind of special equipment that you have on these TV shows.
You're fired up, Jay.
It's like we have this it's got these certain waves and stuff like that. I'm like, no, those are radio waves in the air, okay? There's no store that creates these things for you. Like, you got duct tape all around it. This is not true.
I don't know. They're called like the divining rods. It's supposed to find water. It looks like the two just metal pieces and they turn them. Those kill me. Like, oh, there's a ghost here. Like, no, dude, you just turn that yourself. That one cracks me up more than anything else.
It's like the recording, the audio program that they're using.
The EVPs.
Yeah, but I mean, when they're playing the back, you're like, okay, we have this program that picks it up. No, it's the same program I use to make the intros to these shows, okay? I took it at a radio station I worked at. I took it. It's Quidit Pro. I think it's Adobe Audition now, and I've been using the same one since like 1995, okay? And it still works. You don't have a special recording.
Jay, you have lots of opinions on this ghost stuff, don't you?
It's just some of these shows are like, how is this on TV? I don't get it.
Because people watch it. I mean,
yeah, they are entertaining.
There's lots of trash. I watch the ghost shows. I don't believe any of it, but I think it's interesting. I think it's interesting more for like the ones that delve into like the history of the place, because I find that
interesting. No, those are interesting. But like, you know, you have the Roto-Rooter plumbers, you know, like they're like, you know what we do? We go and we listen to the sounds. Yeah, it's like, you know, no, that's the furnace kicking on, buddy. That's nobody saying come and help me. That's the furnace kicking on. You need an adjustment, okay?
I do watch the Ghost Avengers one. That one's my favorite one.
Yes.
Okay, I'm done with that.
No. Was that cathartic?
Jake, finally, that's been pent up aggression. He's had a rough day.
But at the end of the day, though, I actually, you two say you don't believe, in ghosts. Though. I actually do. So, even though, despite those shows, I do. So,
I would like to believe. I don't believe because I haven't experienced it. But I'm not knocking other people's experiences. Like if they believe, you know, that's what they believe. I just haven't experienced anything that like, oh yeah, that would totally make me think a ghost threw that book off the shelf or, you know, whatever.
Knocks me all the time. You should see the messages he sent me.
But I have met the Ghost Adventures dudes. They were at Scarefest back in the day. Oh, and they were really? They were all really nice in person. Especially Aaron, the bald guy. He was funny. Yeah, they were cool dudes. Yeah. Even though I don't believe a word they say, but yeah.
I think I watch it for Aaron mostly because he's just like they just go send Aaron into a room by himself and he's just like what's up, ghost?
Come and talk to me. What's up?
It's just like a panic attack. It's like, why did you lock me in there? It's like, that's the same thing he did to you last episode. You should have learned that you've been doing it for like 25 years now. That pushes you in the room and locks the door. And no, they're fun to watch. Like I said, I like all the history stuff. Like when they go to some old school or Civil War battlefield, they talk about the history of it all. I think that's the most interesting part.
Yeah.
It's still fun to watch though.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, so down now from that. So
Jay's kind of out of breath after that one.
No. So you did poorly on the game, the horror movie game. Okay. Go ahead and admit it. Okay.
She's now never coming back to the show. Thanks, Jay.
Do you read more
game again?
Yeah. Do you read more horror than you do watching as far as watching movies?
I try to read. I do read most, like, pretty much all I read is horror.
Yeah.
I have been really bad this year. It takes me forever to get through a book. I just finished Queen of Teeth by Hayley Piper. And I was reading it for 2 months. So, but yeah, no, I'm like, I try to buy and read as much as I can.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was Queen of Teeth good?
It was very good. Yeah.
It's over here in this pile of books somewhere.
Yeah.
I will say it was
on the shelf somewhere. So
it was like, I'm kind of glad I took it slow though, because it's definitely not one of those like fast digest books. There was just, there was a lot to it, and I'm glad I took my time with it.
Is there, and you might not have an answer, is there like a well-known book that you can say, you know, they do all those things, you know, read this book because it's like this book. So is there anything well-known that's similar to your books that people might have read before to get them to, well, if you like this, you'll like my books too. This is really unique though, because it's like post-apocalyptic and ghosts. It's a really unique mix of things you've got going on.
Yeah, like a few people have mentioned that it's similar to, like, someone said that it was similar to a Darcy Coates book. Mm-hmm. That they'd read, but I don't remember which one. I definitely was influenced by In the Woods, which is a ton of French book, and I think that's like, as far as the procedural stuff with a little bit of fantasy mixed in, I think that is definitely one that people could check out. Mm-hmm. And then really, I can't really think of anything.
I'm sorry. I was putting you on the spot. No, I'm sorry.
It's hard. It's hard because, like,
we'll just say, if you like books, grab this.
Yeah.
I'll say though, if anyone has read any of the Nightmareland Chronicles books by
Daniel, I was going to say that
they feel very, very different, but also very sort of similar in the same vein as your books, the post-apocalyptic setting, and yours has ghosts, but his has other weird stuff, supernatural stuff going on. So I think they're compatible, completely different stories. That's, but I think if you like one, really, you like the other.
That's really nice too, because Daniel actually did blurb
cool.
The Wildfall. So, nice. But his books are incredible. I definitely recommend.
Great.
So yeah, definitely say if you like those, definitely check out Catherine's books, because I think you'll get a lot of the same things you like about his, you'll like about hers too.
So aside from writing these books and reading whatever you can read, you have a show that you do also?
I do it only during the winter. And that's mostly because it's winter and
you need something to do in winter.
Yeah, my schedule gets kind of crazy come springtime through summer. So I do a show that I call Winter Views, which is like bringing on an author that has a book that's coming out, and we talk about a certain subgenre of horror that they like. So season two, I had some really awesome guests. I had Todd Kiesling, I had Rob Atone, Brian Bowyer, Stephanie Parent, Zach Rosenberg, just like a really awesome set of people. And those are all interviews that people can watch on my YouTube channel if they would like to watch them. Mm-hmm. There's some excellent book recommendations within from the authors. And I will be doing season 3 come January.
Cool.
24.
Nice. Yeah.
And those are live as well. Cause I remember I tuned in, I think Rob's and Brian's were on,
yeah.
I watched them on Facebook, yeah. I think.
Yes.
So speaking of YouTube, as we start to wind down some, how can people find you? Your YouTube, your social media stuff, your Twitter, your YouTube, and all that stuff. And you have a website, yeah. right? Also for yourself.
Sorry, I missed that question because I was.
Where can people find you? Your social yeah. media stuff, your YouTubes or your Twitters, all that stuff.
So I primarily am on Twitter at Catherine Silva. At Catherine Silva _. I am on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, Blue Sky, TikTok.
Are people still sticking with Threads, by the way? Like, I downloaded it, but I've not done one thing with it since
day one. It's very much the Instagram, Twitter.
Yeah.
And it's, I actually kind of like it. Like, yeah. I think I like it better than Blue Sky right now because Blue Sky is like shouting into the void and maybe having like an echo
mm-hmm.
respond.
Threads has been pretty good so far.
I haven't tried the Blue Sky thing yet, but like the Threads, there was a button to hit to follow everyone you follow on Instagram. And I did that. And now I'm getting these, you know, throughout the day, you're now following so-and-so. I'm like, I don't know so-and-so. I didn't even know I was following him before.
So. Yeah.
The only bad thing about Threads is every now and then I'll log in and it'll be just all these accounts that I don't follow.
Yes.
All these like celebrities and stuff. And like I don't want to see any of this. And I block them all and I log in later and they're all gone. I don't know what it is, but
I did that the other day and I was just like, oh, this is what everybody was talking about. Which I think it's going to get better though. Like they are going to start fixing the feed. At least I hope they do because I think it's worthwhile to stay.
It was all the blue check marks that pop up. It's like, I don't want to see any of these.
Yeah. People. Yeah. Yeah. So I think I covered everything. I have a Pinterest too. And,
and a MySpace and,
I never had a MySpace.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I never MySpace had was, one.
MySpace was cutthroat. Cause if you didn't make someone's top 10, you weren't their friend.
Right.
Yeah, I think maybe that's why I never had one. I didn't have very many friends back in school.
Catherine's been fun. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. We want to, thank you very much. And then and adjusting your schedule, totally messed up your schedule for probably
totally
a month.
Should not have turned down the other shows to come on here. She'd be like, no, guys, I'm done.
Yeah.
You moved the date. I'm not
worried. Brad's like, hey, can you do it Saturday? She's like, well, I mean, I have an interview with Stephen King that night, but I guess I could go ahead and
that change would be something.
Things. You know, no, we appreciate you stopping by again. We know it's hard, trying to figure out a proper schedule for everybody, but it's been fun, interesting. We appreciate you coming by. These books are beautiful. Wild
Dark, available now and get the hardcover. There's only like 10 left and then they're gone forever. And then
be sure to read the first one first.
Buy both of them. Don't just start with book two.
Right. Yeah.
The Wildfall comes out August 3rd. Is that right? August 3rd?
Yes.
Nice. Also available later on in hardcover too. But get the special edition of this one because it looks pretty freaking sweet.
Yeah.
I have all your socials linked and website down in the description and show notes so everyone can go follow Catherine and go to her website and buy her books.
There you go. And that's going to do it for this episode of Saturday Night. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Everybody in the chat and everyone who watches this later, of course, we'll have it streaming nonstop on our website too. And then we'll promote it some throughout Twitter tomorrow and everything else. So Catherine, thanks so much for stopping by. We appreciate it.
Thank you guys.
Anything else, guys? That's it, right?
I'm going to go do some ghost hunting, Jay, with my homemade equipment real quick and my microwave with antennas on it.
You can probably just hit record on your phone and go get the same kind of sounds, All right, everyone. See you guys.
See you, Catherine.
Thanks for joining us. Glad you got to see me.
Bye-bye.
I know you do.